used to come to the store, you know. And I remember she used to come to the store and she didn't want to be... Now, she's a woman that didn't want to be waited on, so she came in and sometimes, you know, well, we were used to wait on people, so we'd go in and say, Mrs. Malik, can you? And she'd say, why such in a hurry? Let me take my glasses off so I can see. You know, in the winter, her glasses were all frosted, you know. And she used to get mad when she came in the store, and we asked her right off what she wanted. The fact is, this is more or less the, it reminds me of that people, I think, prefer to be self-service. And you go in the store, you look around, and you see what you want. And it's pretty hard for a woman in those days, you know, a farmer would live about 5 or 6 miles and back, and he'd come downtown with a little list, what they wanted. So they'd give us the list and we'd prepare an order. But a lot of stuff that they forgot to put on the list. And the way they shop, they go to the store and they go around shopping, they think that they want something for $5, they wind up buying $25 worth of stuff. So they see, going through the shopping, what they don't have in the house, but they should buy. And I think it's much better.
Did you used to do home deliveries?
Oh, yes. Yes, the first years we had 2 trucks on the road. We covered from the store north to Grand Isle twice a week. And we covered from the Keegan section and the Van Buren section daily. Every day we went.
And how was that done?
Well, we took orders. We had a man that just went from house to house and took orders. This was more or less the style then. And he delivered the next day.
Did some call up?
Should, or some would, but very few people had telephone at that time. It was too costly. People went to the Depression and they were pretty poor and there wasn't too much.
And how were the people satisfied with that?
I think they liked it. I think it was the thing of the time, more or less, and they were satisfied. But it's not like...
Did you get used to the taste of, you know, like you say, say with some cookies? Or you knew what
well, they knew. They knew. They told us what they wanted. They wanted a fig bar, we knew what it was. And if they wanted a ginger snap, probably there wasn't as many varieties as there is today, but there was a lot of variety. They had these strawberry ripples, we know where they were.
Were they all individually packed?
No, those were more or less bulk at the time. At that time. But the few was packed too. But and meats is the same way. They wanted to be frozen. They told you what they wanted. We tried to manage. Sometimes it was probably not too satisfied, but that was it.
How long did you keep it up?
You know, we kept on delivering from 41 when we started to 1952. Oh, I guess for 11 years we kept on delivering. And we had a number of people that worked for us on
Did you do any of the back roads, like Serpentine?
Yes, oh yes, we covered Sears and Hamlin. We,
how many days?
Twice a week. Twice a week, about, like Grand Isle more. Grand Isle we covered twice a week. And Sears and Hamlin twice a week.
As a young man, you worked for your uncle, with your grandpa with a neat car.
Well, yeah, that was my, one of my first jobs, you know, sell meat house to house in the meat car days. You know, they had a meat car, which was more or less a box on 4 wheels on a wagon, and you'd go from house to house selling meat.
How was it drawn?
By a horse. It was drawn by a horse. You looked at it today, it wasn't too sanitary, but everybody was doing it. Today, nobody could do that because the sanitation laws would just stop it. But then, because you drove a horse, and at the same time you were cutting meat, you didn't wash your hands, you know, too often, because only the reins and, you know, and sometimes the horse would get caught and you'd have to go and help him out, you know, to, while you were inside the house, you'd go and eat in the ditch, you know. He'd start to eat grass on the side of the road, the first thing you find out he was in the... So,
Did this park have ice cooling it, or...?
No, nothing at all. No, you took your meat from the store in the morning, refrigerated, and you put it in a warm cart and you keep on going all day. You try to get rid of it as soon as you could. So that was more or less... Everybody had a cart on the road. Florida had one.
How about the winter time?
The winter time we sold frozen meat. Frozen, and we also had fresh meat, but then the style was more or less frozen meat.
Yeah, but did you cut it up before it was frozen?
Yes, we cut it before it was frozen, put it in the cart, all cut up, and then we go and sell it. But then, in the winter, most of the people bought it, you know, in big quantities, quarters, you know, a hind quarter or four quarter meat.
What was the price of the meat then?
Well, sometimes I think about that and I remember in 1934, of course it was Depression Day, but Uncle Vidal, and we sold pork loin, center cut, 10 cents a pound. It's unbelievable. And you'd sell a full loin, a full pork loin for 7 cents a pound. So, that was the price then. It's quite a difference with today. But of course...
But with the wages then?
Yeah, that's what I'm coming to. Of course, we were paid $12 a week for 60 hours and 65 hours. So that was about 18, 19 cents an hour, 65 hours.
What changes have you seen in refrigeration and care of meat?
Those days, there was hardly any refrigeration. Electric refrigeration was not known too much. There was a few, but very, very little refrigeration. And when we first had it at, in the groceries, and especially working at Vidal Violet, we always kept our ice in the winter. And then we'd store the ice, and then we'd pack an ice box. An ice box that would be about 8 by 10, and we'd pack. And people didn't believe in electric refrigeration. At first, when they first started to come in, I remember my uncle saying that he wouldn't keep meat like ice. That was the old custom. They thought it was the only way of keeping meat. Even when we started here in 1941, my first cooler was an ice cooler, and we kept it for 3 years, and we stored ice for 3 winters. But then in 1944, we put in an electric
Where
ice
did
box.
You get your ice?
And on St. John River. We'd go on St. John River and have somebody to cut it for you. Val Gillett was in business too, and you could buy it from him if you wanted to, and you pack your
How
ice.
How thick was the ice?
Oh, it was a cake of about 30 inches square, you know. It weighed a couple hundred pounds. It was, but hardly.
And how long would this size last?
Well, in a cooler, for a meat store, you'd have to pack that at least. It would hold 10 or 12 of those big cakes, and you'd have to pack it 2-3 times a week. Melted pretty fast. Every 3 days, you had to go and put whatever amount that was needed.
Was there a water container underneath?
Yes, well, yeah, it went. It drained underneath, and the pipe and drained and stuff. And it was.
Was he going into any sewer?
No, there wasn't any storage. I mean, it was just water, so they figured it was all right.
Let it run outside.
Yourself, do you remember the early sports activities in town? Was there baseball or hockey?
Well, baseball was very active when St. Mary's College was here. Of course, a lot of people know more baseball than I do, but we had good teams, and everybody went to the ball game in Van Buren on Sunday. I think at most places they didn't play baseball on Sunday. They have the Blue Dogs, and they just didn't play baseball in Holton, or they didn't play baseball in Cascade. But they could come to Van Buren and play ball. So in town, we had a ball game every Sunday. So Holton or Cascade would come here and play ball with Van Buren team. And we'd get great games. And we'd fill that stand there, you know, to capacity. And get a good time.
Where was that stand?
Was right on St. Mary's, on St. Mary's, today's Van Buren Boys High School in back where the track field is, that's where the stand was. Yeah, a big outside stand.
Do you remember the pot we used to have?
Well, yes, I do. Vaguely, because that was really in the before the 20s, I'd say, when the park was there. I remember going there with my father, a little incident, like him buying me a cone of ice cream at the park and getting on the merry-go-round of the park, I remember that, but that was...
Who owned that?
Gee, I don't know exactly who did. I don't know who.
Where was it situated?
It was right on Moore Street today, where Moore Street is, right opposite the Pultner, where the Pultner was. And there was a beautiful field there. It was just as level as you could see. And they had horse races, you know, every two or three times a week. And they had beautiful. It was beautiful. And the park was nice. And they also had a big grandstand there where you could sit and watch the. More or less like they have today in Frescal or the fair.
Do you remember any racing in the ice in the river?
I do. Yeah, I wasn't too interested because I was probably too young at the time. But I remember going on Sunday, you know, and seeing them have racing and I told Vital that I was working for always had two or three horses and always had one that he went to the races with. So he always bought a race horse to deliver meat. Sometimes we had a little hard time with the horse because it was too hard to think of young meat cut. But in the winter he went to the races with and he enjoyed it.
What do you remember about them? Was it held on Sunday?
The races were on Sunday, yeah.
Now, how did they clear the ice?
They had, I don't know exactly how they did it. I'll be frank with you. That's a little too, I didn't follow that too much. I think you can know much more from your uncle Jim Medora. He had a horse, I remember. And he went to the races. Your uncle Jim there, James Medora.
Which school did you attend?
I went to Champlain School here, and then to St. Mary's, then was still there. Mm-hmm. And I had high school education, so we got in there.
What was St. Mary's? High school.
It was high school, yeah. St. Mary's College. You used to call it college, you know, but it was high school. Yeah. So, the Mary's fathers taught there, you know. In 1931, the year that I graduated, was the last year that the priests were there. Then they moved out. Father Sullivan was there then, and he was the principal. And I think in the spring of the year, in June, after the graduation of 31, I think that's when they moved out.
Was it as does it damage the things they claim, you know, as far as the...
Well, yes, and probably the marriage couldn't make anything with it, you know, tuition and... I don't think that the marriage ever could realize a profit out of the college. That's why they probably struggled through in the early days when they came with farming and keeping stuff.
What's wrong with the building?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. The building stayed there for quite a few years. Town of Van Buren had their high school there for a few years after, and then they tore it down. I don't know exactly when. Probably were.
Do you remember any incident of, like on a windy day, that you could feel swaying of the building with this blast of anything?
I didn't notice that, no. Probably after, and no doubt maybe if you were, you know, it was a high building and not too big, too wide, and too, no doubt if you were on the last story, probably you would on a strong wind. We always were on the first or second floor. So it didn't occupy, I guess, I think it was, I don't know exactly how many stories there was in that building, probably five or six.
Was it a residential school, or?
No. When I went there, it was just
a school.
It was just a boarding school.
It was a boarding school
at first. At first, it was a boarding school, but when I went there, when I started it all, the boarding school was closed. I think the top floor was for the boarders, when they kept, you know.
Do you remember anything of two competing electric companies?
No, that's before my time. That's where I was.
How about the tannery? No one ever spoke about that. Do you know anything about it?
Well, I remember wearing some of the moccasins and shupak, we used to call them, which was an Indian name, I guess, and this tannery was really something. Of course, it had been operating for quite a while, but they sold a lot of footwear all along the river, and they had a pretty good shoe. And that again, you know, I think most of those shoes were without a sole, you know, just a regular moccasin without a sole on it, just a cowhide type of a. I think if somebody at the time, if an active Chamber of Commerce or somebody in town would have been really interested, could have went or developed that to be a real good shoe factory. And the Duma made very, very good with that for a long, long time, but of course it stayed at the same level. They never went to modern shoes or adding on to the line. What they should have done is added on, not stay always with the...
Did they employ anybody?
Yes, well, it was a family deal, more or less, you know, but they had a big family and we were all working there. And,
who were some of the doctors that you first knew in town?
Well, Dr. Hammond, for me, is probably the one that I knew the best, and the old doctor out there, another one that was here, and then his son, Dr. out there, that came in, his son. There was also Dr. Terrio, I think, for a while, but Dr. Hammond was our doctor of home, you know.
Do you remember the WPA project that put in the sewers and down?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that I remember. That was in the 30s, you know, when they built the sewers. Maybe.
Where?
All on Main Street, starting from, especially starting from Tyler Street down Tyler Street and on, from Tyler Street on Main Street, and doing all of the street going through the river, like the Ontario Street, Jackson Street, and Ferry Street here, and Tyler Street here, you know, that's all, and then the sewers on Main Street from here, and that was all done by pick and shovel. There was no water. And that was done in the winter, when it was 40 degrees below zero with pick and shovel. They didn't do much, but it was a WPA project. But the men worked hard there on the project, and salaries were real low. It was a WPA project, and the, it lasted a long time. In 4 or 5 years, I'd say they built addition to it, and they built the Alexander Road at the same time, going towards the Alexander Road. They wanted to have a road to cross to the parent road, and they started working on it. And they put in at least 8 hours a day, and they were paid $21 for a 2 week salary. They were paid every 2 weeks. It was a government project. They checked them in every 2 weeks, and that's all they made, $21 of a paycheck. And they were doing that in 1941 when I started the store. When we opened up the store here, that was the nuclear project was still going on. And they kept on going all through 1941 and 42, a part of it. Then when war declared in 41, in the fall of 41, well, more or less they had more work. And,
is this road, Alexander Road, still open when you have to bring it up?
Oh no, they never opened it up. They went to the farm, the Columbus's farm, and they went a little further up. Yeah, and it goes through the parent road. You can go through there, but it's not paved. It's not a.
But it is open, and you can go come out by the parent road?
Oh yes, you can go through. But it was, they could go through then, way back in the 20s. But it wasn't a paved, it was a dirt road. But the WPA decided to make a new road, to widen the road, make good ditches, and pave it. And they paved it up to Matt Burby's farm, about that's as far as it went. The rest was still a dirt road. And it's still in good condition today. You go through there in the summer and the retire, just takes care of it.
Up someplace in that section, in one of the back roads, there's a wooden cross. Do you recall anything about it?
Well, I do recall, because there was a wooden cross there in the Alexander Road, way back near Fleur Ambassy's farm, not too far from there. And I remember going to visit my uncle, and Fleur Ambassy was my uncle and my aunt, and we used to go there in the summer quite often. And every time we went there at night, we used to go there and say our prayers there at night, you know. And all the community of the Alexander, which was about 8 families at the time, they all gathered there and they said the beads, or they said, you know, nearly every night, especially during the month of May. So whenever we went there, we knew at night we had to go to the cross.
I heard that was the third time they were changing that cross.
They changed it a few times.
Yeah.
They changed it, and I think it was right in the middle of that road, in between Fleur Ambassy and Ignace Violet's farm, the last time
they still have it there. It's too bad they don't go paint it.
Yeah.
It would be nice to preserve it.
Yeah.
Because they still have it, and they have a lot of bushes around it. It's very pretty.
Yeah. And they kept it nice and painted, you know, and it was quite a shrine in those days. And it's still nice. You look at it today, you go through there and it brings memories. And to me, I know, I used to go there, see my cousins, and stay there overnight, stay there a couple of days, you know.
You mentioned your uncle's farm, but how big your farm was and what was it about it?
Well, in those days, they were planting very few acres of potatoes. They were planting probably 10, 15 acres of potatoes. That's all they planted. and they kept cattle, and they cut lumber, and they have, you know, they planted oats, and they have quite a bit of oats, and barley, and chickens, and they kept everything, you know, so they really could live. Buckwheat for their flour, and they really could live out of the farm, so.
Approximately what percentage of whatever was raised went to market, and what percentage was kept for themselves?
Well, in potatoes, more or less, the potatoes were sold on the market. And the hay and the oats, probably 50% was kept for themselves, because they had a lot of cattle to feed. So they kept quite a bit of hay, all the hay they kept for themselves. And the oats too, I mean, they needed to feed their cattle. But
was any machinery used in the gathering of oats, hay, or was it done by hand?
Well, more or less by hand, you know. They had a combine that could, you know, tie the oats, we used to call it a stook of oats, and then they put that in a pile, and they let it dry, and then they bring it in. Years and years ago that they came with a combine that really took care of everything.
Did you usually go pick potatoes at your uncle's farm?
Oh yeah, or? I used to go there.
Was school out during that season like it is today?
No, I don't. Not as much. Not as much. Not in, I think it came after, if I remember right. I may be wrong, but it seems to me that way back they didn't close the school for harvest, or they started. But there wasn't that much potatoes. They weren't planting very, very little potatoes. But we used to go and pick potatoes.
How would they dig the potatoes at the time?
Well, with horses, you know, and they had a digger which was drawn by horses.
One row.
They had a small engine on it, and sometimes it was quite a struggle. This you could get more from the farmers.
Now, do you remember any fairies around here? Or those wigs for your time?
No.
You don't remember any story of them
either? One thing that you talked a little about is the factory used to be a raspberry factory that they had here. I remember in the fall of the year, you know, they needed blueberries, and they went to blueberries after a while, and all the berries that they could, that they went through the factory were all local. Everybody, the farmers, would pick strawberries in the farm, and they'd buy from over across on the inside. And whenever they didn't have enough strawberries or raspberries, they'd hire people to pick for them. And I remember going with them. I was probably 13 years old then. And you'd they'd get a truck, and you'd go into the Medore Road, way back into the Bunnyfast, wherever it was.
Bunnyfast
Road. And you'd go way back, and there was a lot of blueberries there, you know. So they used to bring as much as, you know, two or three trucks load of people, you know, and boys, and mostly young boys, of 13 to 20. And in the fall of the year, we'd go there and pick, especially blueberries in the fall. And they used so much of farming for picking blueberries for them. That was more or less the last years of their operation. They didn't have enough berries, and they felt that the factory would keep on going, that they had to have more berries, so that's how come. They tried it. It didn't work too well, but they did it for two or three years.
Who owned it?
The Johnsons, I guess. The Johnson outfit in Massachusetts. And Albert Medore then, and Fred Terrio were working there, I remember. There was one on the truck, and we used to, we had a lot of fun with them. So we really could tease the boys in picking strawberries and blueberries. Really.
What was the name?
I don't remember exactly. It was so much of fun. Probably a good day's picking would probably make a couple of dollars. But it was good. It was a lot of fun too. We went there on the medium side. It was a picnic.
The Limit Thibodeau building or house at one time was a hospital. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, I remember when they built it. I remember when Limit Thibodeau built a house, which was way back, probably, I may not be accurate on the date, but to me it was in around 1926 or 7, I think. But it was a huge house, and when they built it, I think they had in mind that the building would be used for an hospital after a few years. And when Father Forestier was here, he's the one that had the sisters to come over and take the building over to for an hospital, and we operated the hospital